Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Restaurants are still getting their footing following the early months of the pandemic. From supply chain and staffing shortages, many restaurants are not open full capacity for traditional dine-in. Coupled with delivery apps growing in popularity, the words pivot and new normal may feel exhausted, but they still very much apply to the industry, which leads me to ghost kitchens, which are seen as a solution to adapt to the new challenges and the new needs. Facilities like Maker Kitchens in Midtown and The Line near Sacramento State have developed as ways for entrepreneurs to serve restaurants in Sacramento with lower overhead costs. Joining us now to talk about ghost kitchens is Camille Bazette, who co-owns Hook and Ladder and The Golden Bear, as well as Scott Kingston with Turton Commercial Real Estate. Thanks for joining us. Good morning. Nice to see you both.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Morning.
Yeah, Camille, I want to start with you. You have two decades of experience in the culinary business. How did the pandemic affect your businesses and really kind of reevaluate and shuffle around the direction of where you want to take them?
Well, it's no secret that, you know, there have been a number of challenges, but a lot of things you've read about in media, you know, staffing, supply chain issues, rising costs of everything, you know, the state becoming extremely more litigious. Those things are all very real. You know, a brick and mortar restaurant is a very challenging thing and maybe not for everyone.
How do you describe a ghost kitchen?
Well, it removes a lot of the pitfalls I just mentioned, right? I mean, you can have this opportunity for creative expression and get your brand and your concept and your name out there, but you don't have to necessarily manage people and some of those hard costs that will be there, you know, first of the month, no matter what.
Scott, commercial kitchens, they're not necessarily a new concept, but what's different about a ghost kitchen?
What we're seeing is the demand from the consumer side has shifted, where a lot of the production of delivery food previously was handled out of traditional restaurant kitchens or larger commissary kitchens. Ghost kitchens tend to be smaller, in this case with the two properties that you're mentioning, Maker Kitchens in Midtown and The Line in East Sacramento. They're 200 to 500 square feet each. They have all the infrastructure in place, and it's what we're seeing is that the additional demand from either startups or existing restaurants is shifting more towards utilizing those ghost kitchens.
What prompted you're in real estate? What prompted your organization to get involved in this endeavor?
Sure. Our team, you know, our firm's been around for 12 years. I've been in the industry 20. We've been predominantly focused on urban real estate, and that's office space, retail space, and in addition, food and beverage. And so we list for sale and for lease the vast majority of the food and beverage space in the urban core, and it was a natural progression to go from traditional restaurant space to ghost kitchens.
Camille, what excites you most about ghost kitchens?
I think it gives a voice to a lot of people that might not otherwise have one. You know, it lowers the barrier to entry. Things can be open very quickly and without necessarily a very long-term commitment. I mean, it's a good way to get your feet wet. You know, and there's a gentleman yesterday as an example that called, you know, it's a trucking logistics company here in town, but he has a wing concept he's had in his mind for years, and this might be a way to accomplish that. And I told him as much.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into that low barrier. I mean, give us some examples. You've been in the restaurant industry for decades here locally, just trying to get in and open up a brick and mortar, that traditional brick and mortar dine-in restaurant.
Well, at this point, I mean, it could be a year or more of planning. You know, there's architecture, there's construction, engineering, you know, fees throughout.
Permitting,
of course, yeah. And, you know, the city's working very hard, but they have their hands full with many, many things, you know, housing market, et cetera. So to, you know, get things stamped and final approval and get construction is difficult to schedule. Costs are at an all-time high. And to capitalize all these things and possibly rent throughout, I mean, that's quite the burden to bear.
Yeah.
It's typical that if the three of us were going to open a restaurant, a physical, you know, traditional brick and mortar restaurant, it would take, you know, let's just say it was 3,000 square feet. It would cost the three of us $600,000 to $1 million to open that restaurant between construction, fees, equipment, et cetera. And it would take 9 to 18 months to get that restaurant open. So it's you can move into a ghost kitchen in 2 to 4 weeks, depending on if you have the equipment or not, which is a huge advantage.
We didn't even talk staffing. Sorry, I didn't mention staffing and training. You know, I mean, the human factor, and that is really is what makes a brick and mortar restaurant lifeblood. And not only to find and recruit those people, but train them and then potentially pay them to keep them on the team through construction and pre-opening is significant.
So essentially with a ghost kitchen, you're paying rent to use the kitchen, correct? And obviously you have dramatically less staffing. You just have maybe a couple people.
Precisely, yeah.
What is rent like compared to, you're mentioning $600,000 to upwards of $1 million to actually start your own restaurant?
Yeah, in the scenario of a traditional restaurant for, let's just say you wanted to have a 3,000 square foot restaurant in Midtown or downtown, it would be, the rent would be $9,000 to $15,000 a month plus utilities. In this case, the ghost kitchens, the two options we have range from $2,500 a month to $4,000 a month, and they're move-in ready. You bring your equipment, the hood's in place, the fire suppression system, the grease trap, the three compartment sink. They provide all the maintenance. The landlord provides all the maintenance. Basically, you just move your equipment in and, you know, get your menu onto the delivery apps and their software, and it's pretty automated from there.
What has the response been like?
We are, I think, 90% leased at The Line, which is the only one open right now. The Line is the ghost kitchen near Sac State. It's, I think, of the 11 kitchens we have, 9 of them have been leased. We have 2 available, which one is being negotiated right now. At Maker Kitchens, it's a little bit early. They're planning to deliver around June or July of this year. And so we, you know, we're marketing it, but most people aren't looking 6 or 8 months out. I think we'll have, you know, like The Line, you'll probably fill 50% of it within 60 days and then fill in the balance as time goes on.
What does that signal to you? The fact that it's easy to get to no vacancy.
Easy.
The interesting part, too, that The Line is catering more towards existing restaurants, food trucks, et cetera. Maker Kitchens, of course, does that, but they also offer and kind of tailor themselves towards specialty food and beverage manufacturers. So if, for example, you said, hey, we're going to make our own kombucha or we're going to make our own honey, things like that, that's what Maker Kitchens is there for also. If you don't need all the technology for traditional food delivery, they can start at a lower price point if you're just making, you know, small batch items.
Is there a template elsewhere? Is this happening a lot more in other cities, maybe in like Los Angeles or San Francisco?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's everywhere.
Pretty much every first and second tier market around the country.
The one thing The Line, I think, has done really well, and a set of capital guys thought of, is, you know, like every angle, really. I mean, there's a lounge area, a waiting area for the delivery drivers, which is I haven't seen before. A walk-up window for, say, Sac State students that just want to pick it up and don't need to go through that delivery process. I mean, it's really a well-thought-out, multifaceted approach to the ghost kitchen.
And that property owner, too, Sutter Capital, they'll be constructing their own beer garden immediately next door. And so, for example, if we were out there having a beer on a nice day, you can use the QR code on your table, pick one of any of the 11 restaurants that are in the building. And we're working on, they're working on the logistics of delivering that food out to the table. So, you know, if you had 8 people, they could all have 8 different food, wings, sushi, pizza, you know, whatever. It's not reliant on one kitchen with one specific food type.
It's like a virtual food court.
Yep.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
And that makes a lot of sense, given that when you go to bars or breweries that don't have a kitchen, you know, oftentimes they'll let you bring in food from the outside. So this is just kind of evolving along with that.
Exactly. Exactly. Or, you know, I mean, Sac Yard in East Sacramento is very popular, right? And then, you know, they have a food truck on site almost every day. But imagine if there were 9 or something like that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about food trucks because they've kind of exploded in recent years, but they also can be quite costly. I think to run a food truck can cost well into the 6 figures. Is that also cost prohibitive for a lot of people who have an idea, a culinary idea, and want to get in, but they can't afford it?
You know, my first instinct, and not knowing a ton about food trucks, but you're limited in the amount of delivery that you're able to do from a revenue standpoint, right? So if you park your food truck at Sac State or in Midtown or UC Davis or one of the larger business parks, there's only so much revenue you can do out of that one location. But if you had a ghost kitchen, you're able to do delivery services with, you know, Grubhub and Uber Eats and DoorDash and all of those out of that same location. So in my opinion, I think the revenue potential is larger out of either a traditional restaurant or a ghost kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. And also it solves the problem of having a, well, in this case, Sac County required, fully permitted, health permitted commissary kitchen to work out of, right? You have to prep and arrange things, store things somewhere, right? So you get to have that mobile outlet and that stationary kitchen.
Finally, this is going to be new for a lot of people in Sacramento. What is the customer experience going to be like?
Well, to the end user, if you're opening your DoorDash app or Uber Eats app, every storefront appears as appears like a brick and mortar storefront would appear. So to the end user, there's no difference. It's just where do I want sushi from, or where do I want Mexican food from? The customer experience should be exactly the same as it was before. And in fact, I'm a firm believer in competition, right? More choice is better for the consumer. And in this case, you're offering entrepreneurs and business owners the chance to, start their dream and offer that product to the end user, in which case I think everybody wins. And I want to be clear. I think there will be still the huge demand for traditional restaurants, right, that offer that experience. You can't duplicate at home. You can't duplicate at the office with delivery. But this just offers and will continue to offer to those that want the convenience of delivery a lot more choice.
Thank you both for joining us.
You bet.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Camille Bazette co-owns Hook and Ladder and the Golden Bear, and Scott Kingston is with Turton Commercial Real Estate, explaining what ghost kitchens are for the restaurant industry in Sacramento. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, email us at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Nick Dobis and Victor Corral Martinez, with managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer is Megan Minada. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineer is Antonio Munez. Our show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. And I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.